we got married very fast. So within 2 months of the relationship, he proposed. And then 4 months later, we had our wedding.
Welcome to the Dear Younger Me podcast. I'm your host, Peter Egwai. If you could give 3 pieces of advice to your younger self, what would they be? Our guests answer that question and tell their story with as much honesty as they can bear. No names needed, but I try to make sure everything remains raw. So, if you want to get involved or for anything else, drop me a line via hello@dearyounger.me. On this episode, we discuss why slightly normal is surprisingly hard to find. The subtle difference between negotiation and compromise, and what it feels like to fulfill your desire. Welcome, Diana, to the Dear Younger Me podcast. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, Peter. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast today. I'm very excited to be here and to be able to share some of the knowledge I've gained over the years. So I'm Diana and I live in Sheffield, which is not far from London, about 3 hours drive, where I live with my very lovely husband called Robert. And together we have launched a company, which is called A Better Topics, through which we're helping basically couples have, you know, those important conversations and also still have a lot of fun with each other, because, you know, we think that more people need that in their relationship these days.
Perfect. So let's get straight into it. And let me ask you what your first piece of advice for your younger self would be.
First of all, it would be to hold on very tightly to the belief I had throughout my life. I'm not very sure where I got it from, but the belief that I never wanted to settle for a mediocre relationship. You know, I always wanted to have a great one, and basically just to not get frustrated with other people when they were telling me anything other than, you know, wait for the perfect partner for you. And this is one of the things I'm so happy I've done in my 20s, especially, where I didn't settle for mediocre relationships, because I've eventually found my ideal partner. And I can tell you, it's been amazing ever since. It's strange how we're literally very close to our 4th wedding anniversary, and I'm still super happy and excited every morning when I wake up and I see him. So yeah, that would be the first advice.
Wow, you're giving me butterflies. Okay, so so what would a mediocre relationship look like?
So a mediocre one is where you accept to be put down, where you either you towards your partner or your partner towards you, you know, you call each other names, or you have a lot of arguments, or you know, you feel you have to hide anything here from your partner, like even, you know, the fact that you like shopping, or you bought something new, or even, you know, the fact that you would like to eat like another dessert or something like that. Even the small things, you know, I believe that a great relationship is where you can be open and honest and not judged by your partner, you know, and supported by your partner. That's I think one of the main things, to be really supported by your partner in whatever you're doing.
When you sort of think over the relationships that you saw when you were young, was there something that you saw, were there experiences that you had that put you off the idea of mediocre for a lifetime?
Oh my God. I could write a book only on stupid experiences, to be honest.
And are these yours or things that you've seen?
Mine, literally my experiences. So I haven't had many relationships, but each relationship that I had, there were so many things that happened in them that by the time I was done with like the last relationship, when I was out of that relationship, I was like, you know what? This is not worth it. Like, I'm not going to enter into a relationship unless I know I have that definite feeling that this is the one, this is the guy I'm going to marry, this is the guy I'm going to spend my rest of my life with. And from that decision till I actually met my husband, it was 2 years. So during those 2 years, obviously, I was still going on dates. But the first second I felt that something is off, I was like, nah, I'm not going even that way. Like, no. Because I always thought that if it's not great in the beginning, when will it get great? You know, because life throws problems at you all the time. You know, if a relationship starts off very in a difficult way, you know, already with a lot of problems, you know, what are my expectations for later? Like, at least if it started very well, you know, in the beginning, and then it gets worse, then at least the beginning was nice, you know. But if the beginning is already bad, like, oh my God. So one of the things I still remember to this day, and when I told my husband this happened, he couldn't believe it that someone would actually say that, was with this boyfriend that I had. And we were meeting, because of the way we were both working, we were meeting every other weekend to spend together, which was okay, you know, because I had enough time to focus on my career. He was focusing on his. And then when we've met, you know, we were having fun and everything was great. And one time he said, whilst we were driving somewhere, he said that, oh, I wanted to get you some flowers, but I don't know for what reason he didn't, you know, but he's like, the intention counts, right? And that just baffled me. Like, I looked at him and I was like, I can't believe this. Like, I told him, like, no, if you would have wanted to get me some flowers and you would have went to Asda even, and they have very lovely flowers in Asda as well, you know, you could have gotten me flowers from there, you know, if you actually would have wanted to get me flowers. What's the point in telling me and you're not doing it? Like, what is that? And he's like, yeah, but the intention counts. And I'm like, no, that is exactly like I would have told you right now that I actually plan to do something with you tonight, but I'm not going to, but the intention counts, right? And then he's like, well, you know, it's not the same thing. I'm like, it's exactly the same thing. It's literally exactly the same thing. So, you know, things like these actually put me off from relationships for a while, because I was like, I never asked for flowers, but then if you want to bring me flowers, I'll appreciate it. If you want to bring me one flower, I'll very much appreciate the gesture. And those are the situations when actually the intention counts, you know. But I was like, no, I want more from a relationship. I don't think this is going to go anywhere if you don't respect me at least as much to either shut your mouth and don't tell me, don't annoy me, or actually bring me a flower, you know, like... So, you know, there were many instances where either they kind of tried to keep the relationship, you know, under the covers, when obviously I realized there's something up, because usually when men do that, there is a reason for it. There have been many, many situations in my relationships where I was like, you know, this is not worth it. This is not making me happy. And normally, you know, I have this belief that a relationship and a partner cannot necessarily make you happy if you're not happy within yourself, you know? But I was happy in myself. That was the thing. You know, I was having my career. I was having my money. I already bought my own house. You know, I was well established. And then I was having these relationships that were creating a lot of headaches for me and heartache, basically, you know, where I didn't feel valued and I didn't feel appreciated at all. And I was like, what's the point then? You know, like, why should I put myself through that? You know, there was no reason really, because they are not showing me that they love me. So then what's the point to drag this onward? So that's one of the reasons why most of my relationship actually ended, because I was like, no, I'm not going to stay here and just hope that things will change, considering that I was like, you know, doing a lot of things to change and improve things, but literally no reply, no response, no nothing. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. So I walked out basically. And then 2 years later, I, you know, in the meantime, what I've done actually is, and this is another advice I would give to my younger self, is to educate yourself as much as you can. And I'm not referring necessarily to mainstream schools. Also because mainstream schools in the UK are quite different. And I've noticed a very big difference between public and private schools as well. I mean, I'm not saying there are some really good public schools, but they are very, very rare. Most of them are quite mediocre, to be honest. But educate yourself in whatever your interest is, because there are a lot of courses out there. Like with, I don't know, there are a lot of platforms that with like £15 a month, you can learn anything you want, literally anything. How to sew, how to carve, how to, I don't know, make a website, anything you want, you can learn literally online today. So basically educate yourself, because this is what I started doing. And I started educating myself on relationships, you know, what makes a good relationship and what makes a good partner? You know, like if I want to be in a great relationship, how can I be a good partner?
And is that what you believe, that it's more about what you do working on yourself rather than what you expect from them?
Yes.
Okay, so what did you do to work on yourself?
So basically, I read a lot of books on relationships from therapists on the topic. I watched a lot of TED Talks, a lot of YouTube videos. And mind you, most of these were free. You know, like, they have so much free content and really good content. It's unbelievable that they still put it out there, you know, for free. I did invest in a lot of books as well and courses because, you know, I always had this approach from my corporate days where if I didn't know how to do something or I didn't know a software or anything like that, I would, you know, take a course on it, read some books, talk to someone who knows how to do it, and then implement things and start doing it. So, you know, once I analyzed my past relationships, I realized that the common problem was me. You know, like, all my partners were very different one from another, apart from some tiny elements that they were the same, but otherwise vastly different. Like, how would they look, you know, everything else, you know, their background and everything was very, very different. And then I just realized that I was the only common point in all of those relationships, therefore the common problem. Because I was like, if I'm entering in all of these relationships, clearly there's something wrong with me because I'm not making good choices of partners.
And what was wrong with you? What was the fundamental mistake that you were making?
Oh my God, there were a few. So there were quite a few there, but the most important ones that I worked on was this belief that I had that, first of all, I cannot count on anyone and I should not depend on anyone ever for anything. And this actually came from a childhood trauma, which I discovered later on. I didn't even know I was traumatized by an event that I was traumatized by. It's so strange. Like, consciously, I didn't remember. But then I went to see a therapist and she was a hypnotherapist. So she hypnotized me and she regressed me to that point, you know, where the trauma was. And then I discovered what it was. And it had to do with one of my carers when I was very young wasn't there when I needed them. And then that moment actually felt very unsafe. You know, looking at that same situation with adult eyes, I know it's stupid. Like, I was like, oh my God, what is that? You know? But with the child's mind, you know, that actually traumatized me to the point where I went through my life where I felt I cannot depend on anyone and I cannot trust anyone. You know, I cannot trust that they will be there and I cannot trust that they won't leave, basically. So, yeah, that was one of the main things. And interestingly enough, after I discovered that, you know, many things and many past relationship choices made sense to me because the partners I chose were emotionally unavailable the way I wanted them to be.
Which I guess meant that you had to be independent. So you was basically creating a self-perpetuating cycle in a sense.
Yes, yes. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why I actually got my driving license the first second I could. You know, the first second it was legal for me to get it, I did it because I didn't want to depend on anyone. I didn't want to ask anyone to drive me anywhere. You know, I wanted to have that freedom for myself to actually be able to go. This was actually a very big drive in me achieving everything I achieved in my career, to be honest, because I didn't want to depend on anyone.
You used the word implement before in terms of you read things and then you implemented them. And I think implementation is a big part of the problem, right? People read and pay attention to all sorts of things, but actually implementing it is hard. And I can imagine that if you don't like to depend on people or you're not naturally inclined to depend on people, actually implementing dependence must be tricky. So how did you pull it off?
Well, like most things that are habits and you want to change, there won't be a overnight shift with anything. Even if you take a decision, the actual change comes as a process afterwards. And even to this day, it's still an ongoing process for me. So I started by, first of all, analyzing my dates and partners a lot better. You know, if I would feel that they have that hint of emotional inavailability that normally I was attracted to, I would stop myself in my tracks and I would reason with myself like, no, this person won't be the one because it will just trigger me. You know, it will trigger the same fears that have always been triggered in past relationships. So, you know, that was, you know, there were a few things there. Also, for example, when I've met my husband, from the very first times we started dating and everything, we hit it off very well from the very beginning. It was like we would know each other for ages, although we haven't. And interestingly enough is that we both basically grew up in the same city and we've never met. You know, so we spent 8 years or more in the same city, so for high school and university. And then after university, I moved to the UK, and then he moved to Mexico. And we've met, you know, 6 years later by accident at home in our hometown. It's like a romantic movie, I'm telling you.
which city?
It was a city in Romania, actually, because we're both from Romania. It's called Oradea, which is on the west side of the country. And then we've met there by some very weird circumstances one summer. And then we just hit it off amazingly well. But even, you know, throughout our date and everything, and dates that, you know, when we were getting to know each other and we were talking to each other and everything, I was still obviously not certain 100% that we will actually end up being in a relationship. But even then, I was encouraging myself, you know, that even if I won't end up with him, at least I know that great people and great partners like him are out there, you know, because he literally had everything I wanted in a partner. And I always talk about my list, because before meeting him, actually, I made a list, and this would be, I think, my third advice for myself, for my younger self. Whatever you want, whether it sounds crazy or not, just make a list of exactly what it is and get very clear, and then start planning the steps on how to actually get it and break up the steps into smaller ones, because then it will be easier to achieve. So I've actually made this, I wouldn't say too detailed list. It had like 21 points about my ideal partner.
21 points, Mike. When you were saying list, I was imagining maybe we've got 3 bullet points, maybe 5 bullet points, 21 bullet points.
Yeah. So I used to have like 2-3 things. Like, I wanted them to have a job, any type of job that could provide for them, so I don't have to, you know, provide for them myself. You know, for them to be educated to my level or higher. Now, I'm not saying the education was like an approximation of things, because there are people who aren't educated, you know, as in they haven't been to university, but they are very smart, like street smart. And I always appreciated that as well. So I would have been happy with that too, you know, but like, I wanted them to be smart. So I'm more drawn to very smart people, to be honest, because obviously there are more things to talk about with them. So there were a lot, I had just like few things, you know, and for them to be slightly normal. Those were my 3 for years.
Slightly normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, not obviously damaged, you know.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, years later, I was actually having this conversation with my mom, and I'm like, I thought, you know, I'm being quite broad with my request. Like, how hard can it be for someone to have a normal job, to be smart, and to be slightly normal? Like, these are my only 3 asks. Like, how hard is it? And, you know, interestingly enough, it was quite hard. But then I actually read this book by Donald Neil Walsh, Conversations with God. And he was saying in that book, or, you know, whoever was he channeling, that whatever we live through in this life, we've actually attracted for ourselves. So whether we do it consciously or unconsciously, everything that goes on in our lives, we've attracted that, whether the good ones or the bad ones. So I was like, okay, if I've attracted all my past partners and past dates, why not just focus on someone better, you know? So that's when I actually came up with the list. And, you know, I was like halfway through my list and I was like, I'm going to stop, because I don't want to be too selfish. You know, I don't want to limit the universe into, you know, just finding this person, because maybe it won't be able to find the exact person that I would want. But then I was like, okay, but what if that theory is true? What if it actually works? You know, like, how would my perfect partner, my ideal of a partner, would even look like, you know? So I just went all out. So, you know, I wrote like 21 points, especially things like family values. I wanted him to appreciate family as much as I did, because family is very important for me. You know, for me, we have this saying back in Romania that when you marry me, you marry my whole family, you know, and that's true. Now, luckily, my family is not that big, you know? is basically my parents and my brother. We are very close. And then we have some cousins, but they're quite distant. So that's fine. But yeah, so family values, you know, I wanted them to be happy. I mean, smart and to be very business orientated, because that type of personality has always attracted me as well, mainly because I'm not much business orientated, although now I do have my business. You know, and a lot of things, even things like, you know, taller than me, which to be honest wasn't too difficult because I'm 5'3", so it's not that difficult to be taller than I. And even like dark hair and, you know, slightly darker complex and, you know, all of these things. So I was like, even if, you know, I meet someone and they don't meet all my 21 criteria, but like 75% of them, and especially the very important ones like the family values, then, you know, I'll be fine with that. Like, I'm okay. And then I've met, a couple of months later, I've met my husband, Robert, and I was amazed to see that I literally had everything from my list, literally everything, each point. There wasn't one point that wasn't there. Even I even put on the list that he can dance. And it was so funny when we were dating and he was telling me that over that summer, because we met like towards the end of the summer, over that summer, he actually took some dance lessons, some Latino dance lessons. And I was like, oh my God, like seriously, dude. So he literally had everything on that list. Even down to the passion and the attraction between us, everything was there, everything, literally, each point out of the 21s. And I always kept telling him that he's everything that I wanted and more, because he also had a lot of really good characteristics I didn't think of including in my list, but I've noticed him having them, you know?
And that's what I was going to ask you. Was there anything that, it, in retrospect, you realized should have been on the list that he maybe demonstrated and showed you?
Yes, a lot of the things. So trust, I actually didn't put trust on my list because, you know, I was still working towards that and letting go of that need of definitely trusting someone, you know. But I can still trust him, and he is a man of his word. Like, whatever he says, even if it kills him, if he promises something, he will do it. You know, even if he loses, even in business many times, you know, if he promised something, he will get it delivered, even if it would be a higher cost to him, you know. And I really appreciate that. And his commitment to relationships. Again, I didn't put that on the list. But I love to see that, you know, once he enters either a partnership or relationship with someone, or even a friendship, you know, he is willing to give everything that he can and to make that relationship work, whether it's partnership, friendship, or even, you know, our romantic relationship, which is amazing to see. And I really, really appreciate the effort that I see on his side. So, yeah. And then as we were dating, and, you know, I kept telling him this, and at some point I actually told him about my list. And I was the one surprised, because he started just laughing at it. And he's like, well, let me show you my list, because he also had his list, and his list was, well, 7 pages long.
Wow.
I know. And it was actually an essay. So mine was like a 21 bullet point, and his was a 7-page essay with about 36 different points, I think. Yes. Where he would actually describe situations like, you know, in this situation, she would react this way and this way and whatever, even down to the, and he literally described me in the greatest detail. And it was so strange because he wrote that list 3 years before we've met. So he described me literally, it freaked me out, honestly. When I read that list, I was like, oh my God, this is, so it was literally like reading a report done by someone who knew me very, very well, but at a point where he literally didn't know me yet, you know? So that was so, so strange to see. I mean, even details like, you know, dark hair and green eyes, even details like the languages that we speak, because we speak the same 3 languages, you know, it was, and obviously the family values were exactly the same, everything, basically. So yeah, that list, I'm still very confident that that list actually helped me find the one. And the way I put it, you know, to one of my friends, I asked her, like, do you know what type of person do you want? And she was like, well, I just want someone taller than me, because she's quite tall. And I was like, well, yes, but you have to be quite specific, because although it sounds counterintuitive, the more specific you are, the more likely you are to actually find your ideal partner. Because just think about it, you have the universe here, or God, or, you know, whatever higher entity you believe in. And then you tell them, like, I want this type of person, you know, like she said, I just want a person taller than me. And I was like, okay, there are at least 3,000 taller men than you only in a couple of streets here, you know. How does the universe know exactly which one out of 3,000? You have to be more specific so they can literally, you know, weed out the ones you don't want, basically. So that's what I've done with my list, and that's what my husband done with his list as well. And then we found each other, and we've been living the most amazing love story ever. And I know it sounds quite cheesy, I know. And it sounds so unbelievable to many, I know. But trust me, every morning, even to this day, I wake up and the first thing, you know, I'm telling to myself is, oh my God, I'm so happy and grateful I didn't settle. Like, that was the best decision ever.
On my shelf here, I've got Conversations with God. I read it years ago, back maybe, might be 20 years ago I read this book. I haven't read it since.
Wow.
But it had a big effect on me because it's a conversation, as the title yes. says, but it's a really interesting conversation, right? And one of the things that I do remember from it is the sense that the universe, like I can't say I believe in the secret. I'm very scientific sometimes in my thinking, but one of the things about the universe, this thing called life that is undeniable, is that it is so strange how things work, right? It's just so strange.
Yes.
So I understand precisely why you said that you and Robert sound like this romantic love story, because what are the chances that a month before he meets you, he goes to learn to dance, which ticks off a checklist that he doesn't even know exists, right? Just
exactly.
What are the chances of that? What are the chances of two people from the same city moving to completely different time zones in different parts of the world,
yes.
and then coming together again? It's those aspects of life are magical in a sense. And
yes.
in your life, so aside from your relationship with Robert, have you seen glimpses of those types of coincidences or those moments of chance that sort of point you in the right direction, that show that
yes.
the universe is listening to what you want?
Yes, every time. And I have quite a few stories about this, to be honest. My only issue with it is that whenever I try to force it, it doesn't work. And that's one of the main things that all these teachers about law of attraction try to tell people, that don't force it, because you'll just ruin it, you know? And that's true. Whenever I don't force it, whenever I put a question up and just leave it and let it go and truly let it go, and I don't stress about it, then the miracle happens in the best way possible. And so, for example, even with my job, okay? So when I first came to the UK, for the first 2 years, I was working in retail. And because the hours were long, the pay wasn't so good, I wanted something else. And now, because my original background is in law, because that's what I studied in university, I couldn't really use that degree in the UK because the Romanian law system is very different from the British one. So to equivalent my diploma, it would have taken me 3 years or so. And I was like, I don't have that time. Also, I cannot go full-time to university. I need to support myself. So what I've done is I actually did a medical secretarial course, actually a legal secretarial course. But then the first job I got through an agency was at the hospital. And even before getting the job, so I already had my diploma, and it was more than 6 months till I actually got my first job through an agency. Before I got my job, before the agency ever called me even to go, and because I put my CVs to, I think, 4 or 5 different agencies in Sheffield at that point, nobody called me back for about 6 months. And then I remember I went back home to visit my parents, and I told my mom, I said, let's go and buy some office clothes. Now, bear in mind, at that point, I had no ideas of, I knew, you know, that I'll try some more. I didn't know when. It might have taken, I don't know, another 6 months, a year. I didn't know how long it will still take for me to get an office job and an admin job. But I was like, let's just go and buy some office clothes. So we actually did that. And interestingly enough, after I came to the UK, within 3 weeks of that, I actually got my first job in NHS. So although it was like a temporary contract, still, it was the first one I already got it, which was very strange to see. And then when I got my job, you know, I was a temp and, you know, I was doing very well. You know, my managers loved me and everything. And interestingly enough, I went for that when that job was coming up for the interview, you know, to get it as a permanent job. I went for that interview and they failed me. And that was so interesting to see because I was so confused. I was like, you keep telling me I'm doing my job so well, but then you fail me at the interview. Like, what is this? I don't get it. And then one of my managers was like, well, yeah, but I don't think you would have stayed on this job for long. I need someone who can stay here for years and I don't have to interview again for this job anytime soon. And I was like, you know, well, that makes sense. And then I kept repeating myself, it means something better must come on, you know, like something better must come along the way. Like, and I think about 2 months later, again, through some very weird circumstances, the last minute I find out about this other job, which was a slightly higher up. And actually the application day was the day before when I found about it. It was just one of the managers were asking me, did you apply for that? And I was like, I didn't even know, you know, that job came up and, you know, they're like explaining what happened and whatever. And I just emailed the manager who was recruiting for that job. Can I still apply? I know, you know, it's a bit late, but I just found out about it. Can I still apply? And she was like, yeah, sure. You can apply. And I got the job. So again, when I went further up, because I started from office admin assistant all the way to secretary, medical secretary, and then learning and development manager. So at each step of the way, each job that I've got were literally through very weird circumstances. They literally as if just fallen in front of me because I was not stressed about it. I knew I am about to go further up. That was my constant belief, like I'm going to go further up. And I was also working on it. So it's not like I was just sitting back, just doing my daily job and that's it. I was investing a lot of time in educating myself then, you know, on a lot of things that managers would do, in getting experience, in stressing my then manager to allow me to do more things. Although it wasn't my pay grade, I wanted to do more things just to have the experience on my CV. So, you know, all of these, all the time I had this. Another very weird story is with the car that we have. And this, again, is so funny. So when I was working in NHS, I was walking home because I was like half an hour away from the hospital. Every time I was walking home, I was passing this Jaguar dealers in our town. Every time. And I would look at the cars. And sometimes I would even walk in, but just to the parking lot to see what types of cars they have. I always like Jaguar. I have this affinity for them. I don't know why. Don't ask me. So I always wondered, how does it feel to actually walk in a place like this and just get a car that you actually like without considering the price too much? You know? And many times, even when I was walking by with my brother, I'd be like, let's go see the cars. You know, every time. Every time I would ask the same question, my brother would be fed up with me. He's like, seriously, every time we pass this place, you always ask the same question. I'm like, but I want to know, like, how does it feel, you know? And, you know, I left that. We actually moved in a different side of the city then, you know, when we bought the house. After that, I've met my husband. And, you know, a few years later, we were like, okay, we kind of need a car as well and everything. And his businesses were working well. And we were very set on getting an electric car because we love the idea of electric cars, you know, no fuel, no pollution, all of that. We loved it. And we looked at cars about 3 years ago. And now I don't want to sound this as bragging, but because, you know, I really love the Jaguar cars. So we actually looked at few cars at that point in time, but most cars, because they were just the first ones coming out electric, you know, more that weren't Teslas. Most cars dealerships told us that we need to wait 12 months at least to get our car. And we're like, we cannot really wait that long because we need a car like right now. So, you know, out of the blue, I'm like, does Jaguar even do electric cars? You know, like we looked it up and they actually did. So we went and test drove it, and it was amazing because we test drove a Tesla before that, and we really loved the power of the engine, but we weren't very convinced about the car itself, how it looked, and the user experience in the car. For me, it seemed too futuristic. I don't know. It didn't look like a car to me. And to my husband as well, he was quite disappointed with the interior as well, considering, you know, how much effort they've put in the engine of it. So, you know, when we went and saw the Jaguar that actually looked like a car and it drove amazingly well, obviously being electric, it's a total different experience from a petrol engine. And, you know, so we were like, okay, we're set on the Jaguar. And I started laughing in myself. I'm like, seriously, we're getting a Jaguar? And my husband didn't know about, you know, the past wishes I had in my previous years. I didn't tell him anything about it. I was just very surprised and pleasantly surprised with the car. And the funniest thing of it is that on the day when we actually went to sign the paperwork, get the finance on it and everything, my husband tried to put the finance on his business. He couldn't because he was only for like a year and a half in the UK at that point. So you need at least 3 years history in the UK. He tried to put it on himself personally. Again, he couldn't. He was only for a year and a half in the UK himself. So he couldn't do that. And then the guy just looks at me. He's like, what if we put it on you, as in on me, you know? And I was like, well, I do have quite an okay wage, but then, you know, I have a mortgage as well. I don't know how that impacts it and everything. And I was like, you know, you've been in the UK for like, I think it was 8 years at that point. You know, let's just try it to see if that goes through. And interestingly enough, that went through. So not just that I got a Jaguar, but also the Jaguar is on my name, which was the funniest thing ever. Because when I saw that it went through and it was put on my name, I just started laughing. Like they were looking at me like a crazy person, like, what's up with you? You know, like, what? Why is it so funny? And I just couldn't believe it. And I just called my brother and I'm like, dude, you won't believe it. What happened? Like, we were trying to get the car, but he couldn't put it on name. And it's on my name and it's a Jaguar. And my brother was like, oh my God, what? And then I explained my husband and to the sales guy as well. I'm like, you have no idea how many times I walked by this exact dealership. And every time I was wondering, how does it feel to get your, you know, a car that you like? Not necessarily minding the price. Obviously, we did mind the price, but not that much, you know, to downgrade the car too much.
And how did it feel?
Amazing. And it still feels amazing. Like right now, because we're moving abroad, we need to sell the car. And honestly, my soul hurts because I need to sell it. I still love the car so much. Like we took so good care of it still. I mean, still that the story itself, you know, it's so representative that if you're very clear on what you want and if you're not trying to control it in any way, it will definitely happen one way or another. Like those years, you know, when I was walking by Jaguar, I had no idea if or how this would actually happen. And it happened in the most perfect way possible.
Do you know what? So again, the universe is a strange place. So literally 20 minutes before we started recording, I'd gone to see a car because I'm in the process for a very long time for various reasons. I've driven old cars. Like I'll buy a car cash after it's been maybe about 10 years. So I get to drive the cars that I've always wanted to drive, but I'd get to drive them much later. They're always older. They're nice cars. Yeah. I'll put a nice sound system in the car. But anyway, recently I basically decided, or I can't say I've committed to it yet, but I had a thought of, do you know what? I actually want to get something that I actually want to drive. And what's been really interesting, and it touches upon some of the things that you've already said, and in fact, your adventure to getting your Jaguar, is that in respect of buying a car, I'm actually very particular. I'll have certain characteristics about that car that are non-negotiable. In fact, I spoke to a good friend of mine and he basically said, look, wait until you get exactly the car that you want to get. And it was such an interesting moment because even though I did have this list of non-negotiables and list of things that I wanted, in truth, I didn't always populate that list with the things that I really, really desired. It always felt like, you know, I can have that, but Pete, that asking for that is a little bit too much. The car that I just finished test driving before I came back to record this, basically ticks most of the boxes. Actually, it misses one. This particular model, the person who bought it, because it's a used car, the person who bought it didn't get a particular option. And I was driving back thinking to myself, but is it that important? Will I really mind? It's good that we had this conversation, because the truth of it is why settle? Why settle? Yeah. There are so many options out there. And obviously, you can't be too picky about everything and every component of your life. But the joy that you expressed when you talked about having, you know, to get rid of the car at some point, and the way in which you looked after it, potentially a consequence of the fact that you really wanted that specific car, and you're happy to have had that specific car, and now you're sad to be letting that specific car go. So, yeah.
Yes.
The universe has taught me a lesson today.
You know, an interesting thing is that when we were thinking about whether to buy the car or not, because it was, you know, it costed us more than we were ready to pay for a car at that point in time. And we weren't sure whether, you know, would it be worth it, because it's a lot of money and everything. And my husband actually had this discussion with one of his friends, and he said that, listen, just go and buy the car. Because if you buy another car, like, you know, that's cheaper, that is not something you want, it will be okay. But the different feeling you will have every time you drive that car because you love it, it will be so worth it. Because just being in that elevated state for longer, you know, it makes everything worth it. And even now, like, I'm serious, when I drive this car, I love it. Like, also because it's electric, every time literally you just touch the gas pedal, basically, you fly straight away. I love that sensation. We got to a point where, you know, when you go with a plane and when it sets off, it kind of pushes you in a chair. We got to a point where now we're on a plane and we're like, nah, it's fine. Like, before we used to love that sensation. Now, because of the car, because obviously we got it all the time now, we're like, nah, you know, the car is a bit faster than the plane even. So it is worth it. And it's the same when you have your perfect partner. It's exactly the same. Because if you just settle for someone who, you know, has 75% of the things that you want, or you're not even sure exactly about all the things that you want, so you just accept someone who, you know, just matches the minimum three, let's say, you will, you know, be in a relationship that's okay. It feels okay, and that's it. You know, it doesn't feel great. But once you are in a great relationship with a great partner, you will never settle for anything less after that. Because even when even when I was just dating Robert, and I was like, even if we'll never be in a relationship, I'm at least happy to see that people like the ones I want actually exist, and they might actually be interested in me, you know? So I'm like, you know, whatever happens. And this is, I think, one of the things that actually made things work for us in the beginning, the fact that I wasn't trying to hold on to it forcibly. You know, I was like, I've let go of everything. I was like, if this happens, happens. If not, then it wasn't meant to be. And many things like these, I mean, obviously most of the examples I'll give are examples about things that we've got, but mainly because more people can relate to these, you know? So another really good example is this. We got a piece of land overlooking a lake. You know, it was like on top of a hill, overlooking a lake, very great area, not far from the city center, you know, amazing. Because we looked for our, you know, dream house, we couldn't find it. So we decided, you know, maybe if we build it, we'll get there eventually. So we were looking for land, and we weren't planning to buy it when we did, but we were just like looking around to see, you know, what the price is, where the lands are and everything. So my husband spoke with some of his friends who are in the business, some real estate agents, and they're like, no, if you find the land, you have to literally snatch it up, because, you know, they get sold very quickly. So he actually showed him this piece of land. He's like, if I would have enough money to buy it, this is the one I would buy. And he took him to the land and he saw the view and he was like, this is it. Like, you know, he just called me. He's like, I think I found the great land. We need to get it now. So I went out and saw it. I loved it as well. You know, the view was amazing. We were already starting to plan on it and everything. And we started negotiating with the landowner, you know, about the price and everything. We actually haven't negotiated down the price because we were ready to buy it, you know, just to have it and everything. But he, later on we discovered, he only used us to increase the price in another negotiation that he was in before us with someone else. So basically we lost that deal, you know, and my husband was so upset, you know, because he's like, oh my God, I could have done better. I could have done more. I could have talked to him like this, like that. And I was like, no, I kept telling him like, no, it means this wasn't for us. We've done everything that we could. We were really nice people. You know, we didn't try to, you know, fool him in any way with the price or the deal or anything. We were very honest from the very beginning. You know, we, whatever that he asked, we said, we'll give it, you know, all of that. I'm like, if this didn't go through, it means it wasn't for us. And something better has to come along. Something better has to come along. And this is what I kept telling him. And he's like, yeah, yeah, whatever. He's like, I don't believe this. You know, I'm not into that type of things and everything. And I'm like, okay, just leave it then. But definitely something better will have to come along. And in about a month later or so, we actually found a different plot. Actually, there were more plots because the first one was one bigger one. And the second option that we had were like few plots that we actually had to buy individually from people to make it a bigger plot, the size of the one that we needed. And it is in a better location, even closer to the city center. And the layout of the land as well is a lot more favorable than the previous one. So when we found this, literally, I just told my husband, I'm like, you still don't believe me. You still don't believe me after all these years. When one door is closed, another one will definitely open and a better one. So, you know, for those who are dating, for example, and they get, you know, depressed and sad that they haven't met the right person yet, it's fine. Like, still go on dates. That's fine. But, you know, just know that if a relationship ends because, you know, that wasn't the right person, definitely a better one has to come, as long as you wait for the better one and you expect a better one.
And make the list.
Yes, make the list.
So you've been together, you and Robert, for 4 years, or you've been married for 4 years?
So we got married very fast. So within 2 months of the relationship, he proposed.
Wow.
And then 4 months later, we had our wedding. So basically, back in like October, November was 4 years that we've been together. And now in May will be 4 years that we've been married.
Wow. So the thing is that two of those years were sort of the COVID lockdown. And one of the challenges that I imagine will come out in the stories and biographies that people write in future is that the test that was posed by essentially being locked in the house with a person that, yeah, for some people, a person they believed that they loved and no longer love, that period of lockdown must have been challenging. How did the two of you find it?
Well, I loved it. And I know he did as well. So there are a few elements to that as well. So before the lockdown, I actually worked in NHS as a manager. And I worked in the lockdown as well the first months on a very interesting project where we were implementing these video consultations with patients, because obviously patients were not allowed to come to the hospital anymore. Once that project ended, I mean, I was already, you know, considering leaving NHS, because by the time I got to be a manager, I realized that even though I was a manager, I didn't have any creative freedom. You know, I still had my managers who had theirs, and I still had to just pass on, you know, orders from above, and I couldn't really implement as many things as I wanted. So I was already looking at, you know, what else could I do? What career shift could I make? Now, my husband, he already worked from home, and he did so for, I don't know, the last 10 years, I think. Ever since he had businesses, basically, he always worked from home. So that wasn't a challenge as such, because we were kind of used to that. And we were already working on this project together called Better Topics, which is essentially a card game for couples that is also a game that has a lot of repeatable questions to get couples to talk to each other about the important things of the relationship. and also still have fun, because first of all, it's a game. So it's like a lot of elements into it that kind of change the pace and make it fun. And also it has its own reward system. So whoever wins the game gets to choose their own reward. So we were already working on this project. And when the pandemic came, although we weren't 100% ready with it, we're like, okay, now we have to actually launch it, because literally people are physically locked in, you know, with each other, not even allowed to leave the house in many cases. And I'm like, you know, they'll either kill each other during this time, or they'll have the best relationship ever. But I was like, most of them will just end up hating each other by the end of it, because, you know, many don't even know where to start anymore, especially if that connection between partners is lost over the years, which I understand it can happen. You know, you have children, you have pets, you have hobbies, you have all the other things. And many people forget to reconnect with their partner, you know, and actually connect with them. Because although, you know, things have been said in the dating phase, and discussions were, you know, happening in the dating phase, a part of those discussions kind of need to be kept up, because over the years, people do change. You know, over the years, their interest changes. So it's always good to be very aware of what your partner still wants and how those things actually change, and yours as well, because, you know, we all change. So that's when we actually launched the Better Topics. And that's when we actually realized that we need someone full time on this, because it's not a small project. So that's when I actually took this shift, and I left the NHS and I started focusing fully on Better Topics.
So the game is a card game, you said?
Yes.
It's a card game, play with your partner. And how does the game work? So give me the quick rundown. What do you do?
So as I said, there are repeatable questions, and because they are repeatable, we've created them in such a way that they can be asked every week, but the answers will always change, because whatever you go through every week changes.
Okay, so this isn't a game that you play over the course of an hour. This is a game that you play for much longer than that.
So you can. I mean, there are over 120 cards in one deck of cards, and obviously it depends how much time couples actually want to invest in this, but they can play it for hours, you know, at a time, and then replay it again the next week, and then replay it, and then replay it, because, as I said, the answers will change anyway. So there's that element of newness in it. And there are a lot of what we call modifiers. So these are cards like cancel the question or reverse the question.
Oh, yeah. I'd like those ones. I'd like those ones. Cancel the question would be my favorite one, I think.
Yeah.
I don't want to answer that.
And also modifiers that ask for more details. So why, with whom, how did you react to that? And, you know, just to keep the conversation going. And then obviously whoever gets rid of their cards first out of their hand, they get to choose their reward out of the reward deck. And again, these are things that the couples need to do either for each other or together. So they range anything from a 20-minute foot massage to we're getting takeaway that I like, or we're watching a movie that I like, or or I get breakfast in bed, or my personal favorite is whatever I want, whenever I want.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how it actually works. And also because not many people actually like physical card games to play with, we also have the Better Topics app that people can play with their partner.
Okay, that's really, really cool. And I can see why it works, because in a sense, it opens up the communication. But one challenge, right, in relationships, particularly after you've been in relationship for a while, what do people do? Like, what advice do you give to people if, for example, there's a conflict, like two people want to go in two separate directions, but in a sense, they're tied at the hip now, right, because they're together. In your experience, how are those types of problems resolved?
It all comes down to negotiation. And I call this negotiation rather than compromise, because when you say compromise, someone definitely loses something. Whereas in negotiation, they both win. So in a situation where, for example, me and my husband, real life situation, we were deciding whether to still stay in the UK or move abroad. Because now with Better Topics, I'm working from home as well. We can physically do that. You know, and my husband, although he likes UK, you know, the weather actually affects him quite bad, especially his joints. So I actually needed a few days to think about this, you know, because he was like, so right now we can literally move anywhere you want in the world. And that thing was like, that statement literally shocked me. And I was like, okay. And he expected me to have a country in mind. Oh, I always wanted to live there, here, or there. And I was like, I don't know. I didn't know. I honestly did not know. I was like, I have no idea because I've never thought of it because that was never an option for me. You know, I always was tied to a physical desk that I had to go to and be at. So there was never an option for me just to take my laptop and move anywhere, you know. And many people think that, you know, this laptop lifestyle is so dreamy and so nice and something to strive towards. And yes, you can still take your laptop and go to a beach. Now, I guarantee you, you're not going to work anything whilst on the beach. I guarantee you that because I tried and it doesn't really work. But, you know, I was like, I don't know. Like, if I want to go somewhere, like a nice beach or something, I would just go and relax. Either way, I wouldn't want to go and work there, you know. So we really started discussing, like, okay, why do we want to move? So he definitely wanted to move. I didn't really want to move, to be honest. You know, I still loved UK. I already had my house, which I really love. And I was like, okay, if we move, why should we move? You know, like, what should we stay? Should we move? Like, if we move, where would we move and why? You know, so we actually negotiated because he wanted a warmer country. I was not opposed to a warmer country, but I still wanted a very developed country, if that makes sense. So, you know, we looked at many other factors as well. Also, the fact that we want to start a family and have children and everything. So I told him, like, obviously we first negotiated, you know, how many children we want. I said 3, he said 4, we're going to have 3 then, you know. So I said, listen, because we want more children and maybe not even stop at 3 or 4, God knows, I definitely want help from our families. You know, I always appreciated how close he was to his grandparents. I was never very close to my grandparents and I always felt sorry about that, you know. So I was like, what if, you know, we move closer to our families because I could get help. They'd be happy as well because they would be involved. And also our parents are at an age where they might be able to fly on a plane for another 5 years, maybe, you know, but after that would be quite difficult for them because, you know, they are quite old-ish. So, you know, after we've put everything in balance, we've decided, you know, to move back to Romania because our parents are there. Commute is very easy from there anywhere in Europe, and most countries are okay to visit by car. Also, we drive on the same side as most of Europe, unlike UK. So, you know, we've put a lot of things in balance and then we decided and then we took a decision together, you know. Although the first country that he wanted to move to was either Spain or Italy, definitely, you know. So this is where the negotiation came in. And I was like, okay, if you want to move away from here where I like it, then I need to get something out of it as well. So I got out the fact that, you know, we're close to the families and all of that.
What I like was we were talking before about the way that the two of you met and the two of you had, well, you had your individual list. He had his 7-page essay with his 36 points. And in a sense, now the two of you are making a list together. That sounds like what the process was. It was the same thing that you'd done before. You were now applying to where you were going to live, but you were making a list together. So it wasn't that you had two separate lists. Maybe you had two separate lists, but either way, you merged them and you made a list that both of you could live by and be happy with.
Yes. And what I would want to add to that is that even when you have your list, you still have to feel it. And I'll explain this why. So, for example, when we were looking for houses, you know, in our home city, and we had a list of the criteria we wanted the house to have, like the number of minimum bedrooms, type of layout, anything else, you know, open space outside, some backyard, some green space, few trees, you know, all of these things. So we had a list of the things that we wanted in a house. And again, we have this friend of ours who's a real estate agent, and we told him what we want. And he's brilliant. Like, he literally found us everything that we wanted within the price range that we asked for. And he said, there is actually a house exactly with everything you wanted on your list. And he took us to see it. It literally had everything. It had a pool as we wanted. It had a massive backyard and front yard. It had a tennis court. It had a, guest house. It had parking, massive parking underneath the tennis court, which was interestingly done. Everything that we wanted on the list, it had. However, the house itself, it had the number of rooms that we wanted, but the layout of the house was so weird. Like, it wasn't a family house, but it wasn't an office style house either. It was something in between, and it wouldn't make sense for either. You know, you would go up, you would have rooms here and then few rooms there, and it would make no sense. It had no structure to it, no sense. We were trying to imagine a family living there, and it made no sense, you know?
You just wanted a house that was slightly normal, talking about what we were talking about before. I just want a layout that's slightly normal. How much is that to us?
Exactly. So in this house, you would go in, you would have a big living room in like a semicircle type of shape, and then you would go up, and there would be rooms here and there, like thrown about in a weird way. And then in the middle, you would have this massive ceiling with glass and... You know, we're like, this doesn't make sense. Like, how do you even live here? Like, what room do you make here? And what would be that room? And, you know, we were so shocked to see that this house had everything that we wanted, but the actual structure of the house was way off. Like, literally, if we would have bought that, we would have bought it for the space outside. We would have turned down the house and rebuilt it because there was no way you could live in it. And then, you know, when we said eventually that no, the guy was actually telling us that when the house was built more like a party house rather than for a family to live in, although it had literally all the other elements that we wanted. So, you know, even if you have your detailed list, make sure everything that you want, you include in it, especially the feeling of it as well, because the feeling and the layout was way off. We never included that in our list. We never thought of including that in our list, you know?
Yeah. So what's cool is that 6 years ago, right? So you finish this date and it's like, you know, I'm not settling anymore.
Yes.
So 6 years later, right? So you've got the 2 years of waiting for Robert, the 4 years after you find Robert. So if you could, and you could go back to that person, your younger self 6 years ago, tell her how it feels to be Diana now, because it seems like your life's been good, but your life in the past little while seems to have been amazing. There's Jaguars involved, there's land and lakes, moving back to see your family, you know, you've got great husband, you're working now outside of one of the largest bureaucracies in the world and doing your own thing by making other couples stronger and happier. Like, what does it feel like? Tell Diana 6 years ago what it feels like to be you today.
Oh my God. That's all I can say. That kind of sums it up. Oh my God, in a very enthusiastic way. It feels, imagine this. You wake up in the morning on a very sunny morning. You look outside, it's night and nice and bright. And it already gives you that pleasant feeling already in the morning. You look to your right and you see this amazing partner that is there in bed next to you, cuddled up next to you, and always very happy to always touch you, even if you're just with a toe, you know, even if we're like literally on the sofa, I'm reading this side, he's reading the other side, he would still stretch out at least with his toe to touch me, you know. And I love that because my love language is touch. So, you know, I just love it. So imagine the best date you ever had with the person that you feel you've known for years, you know? We all met people like that where we felt like, oh my God, I can just hit it off with this person. We could talk for hours, you know? That's times 10 every day.
That's awesome.
That's how it feels every day. And even the smallest things that you do, you enjoy so much more. Even things like commuting. I used to love it when he used to drive me to work, because we would spend time together. Even now, when we go on long trips with the car, whether for business, whether for pleasure, I love that time spent in the car with him when the radio is not on, we just talk. I love it so much. And I'm so happy you know, that he appreciates those moments as well. I love even the fact that he still brings me flowers, you know, every once in a while, he still brings me flowers on date night. I still appreciate that. And it's basically amazing and heartwarming all the time. This is the most interesting thing. It's all the time good.
Benefit of not settling. You get the yes. flowers, not just the intention. But look, it's been great talking to you, and I've really enjoyed it. We did it in a slightly different structure, actually, than we've done most of the episode, because we have the three pieces of advice a little bit more separated out. But going back, you had hold on very tightly to the belief that you shouldn't settle for a mediocre relationship. The second yes. one was educate yourself as much as you can about whatever you can. And the third was whatever you want, crazy or not, make a list.
Yes.
I liked all three of them. I think the making a list one is the one that's resonated with me today for reasons that I explained to you about. But I'm going to end now by asking you the question that I'll ask everyone at the end of the show, which is, we've talked about the pieces of advice that you give to your younger self. But today, what piece of advice do you need? What advice would you give yourself today?
Wow, that's a good question. I think patience. I think alongside everything else, patience, it's one of my biggest lessons in life that keeps coming back to me. And even when I think I'm good with it and I've learned my patience and I've learned how to be patient and still grateful, still hits me and I'm still not patient. So I think be patient, because it's all gonna be sorted out, I think, yes. Because, yeah, that's it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dear Younger Me podcast. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording it. If you want to be on the show, send an email to hello@dearyounger.me.